it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Drive on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. Tune in on game day to hear him 3 hours before kickoff and immediately following the final whistle. Here's the new pregame and postgame host for the Chiefs Radio Network.
Kansas City wins the game!
Joshua Briscoe.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Briscoe. Briscoe, when was the last time that you ate at Long John Silver's?
Oh, man, a decade, 2 decades maybe. I think with my grandparents in Wichita, I'm guessing that specific Long John Silver's is no longer standing. So I'm gonna say maybe 20 years.
Tomorrow, if I gave you a $1,000 gift card and I gave you a gift card to Boston Market or Long John Silver's, which one would you take?
Ooh, well, $1,000 is a lot. I think $1,000 of Long John Silver's would do, like, irreparable damage to me and whoever else I took. So I might give Boston Market a go, but that's another one. I'm curious how you guys found this topic today, because those are, like, throw in a little A&W in there, and you were mentioning three chains that I don't think I have seen in the wild in 10 years.
Nobody has eaten an A&W since 1997.
No, I drank an A&W yesterday. They still make a good sugar-free root beer. That's great. They're not serving food. Not in our region. No way.
Briscoe, if you had a power ranking, maybe you have one and I just missed it, so I apologize if I missed it. What team would you have at number one right now on your power ranking? And is it not crazy to think that the Chiefs could be number one on your power rankings? And if the playoffs started today, the Chiefs would not make the playoffs.
It's not crazy to put the Chiefs there. I guess in like a King of the Hill kind of sense, they probably should. Because I think I would have said the Lions, and a few weeks ago I would have said the Eagles. And at this point, no, I don't mind putting the Chiefs there. If you want to talk me into like the Colts or whatever, I really respect what they've done. But I'm not putting Daniel Jones's team above Patrick Mahomes's team when they've looked good altogether. Let me run this by you because I don't have a power ranking, but I have a new theory of the 2025 NFL season that's making it a little bit easier for me. Here's the theory. Everybody's the Chargers now. All of them. There are 31 Los Angeles Chargers and then the New York Jets. And that's it. Everybody else is some version of the Chargers. Pretty good and can beat you. Pretty injured and probably won't beat you. Super Bowl hopes. High draft pick hopes. Like, there is just such a tar pit of NFL teams right now that are all so close together. The margins are so thin that if you tell me, yeah, I get Patrick Mahomes and a 3-3 football team that's getting its number one offensive weapon back, I think that's probably the best team in football because everybody is just neck and neck.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier, that I think there are 8 teams that are just, why are you even talking about them? Like, there's never a reason that you and I should be talking about the Saints or the Jets or the Dolphins. They're not going anywhere. They don't have a chance this year. Why waste anybody's time? Once you get past those 8 teams, there's 24 teams that just anything is absolutely possible. 1 week, you'll think the Buffalo's the best team in the league. They got dominated start to finish by the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons lost 30-0 to the Carolina Panthers a couple of weeks ago. Like, you're completely right. Like, once you get away from the dregs of the league, they either got bad quarterbacks, they got a young quarterback, they're about to fire their head coach, they just fired their head coach. Like, once you get away from those teams, your guess is just as good as anybody's when it comes to who's good and who's not in this league.
It's so funny because I really think if we wanted to really nail this down, we could get that dregs number down even further. Now, like, the Dolphins only win is against the Jets. They belong in that group. But, like, the Saints are insane because of what the Giants did. The Giants lost to the Chiefs, beat the Chargers, lost to the Saints, beat the Eagles. That's just a thing that happened in a 4-week stretch of football this year for a below-average Giants team. Like, that's just the place that kind of everybody's in now, which is, again, I think why this reflects well for the Chiefs, not just because the Bills have dropped a couple of games and the lead in the AFC West is already almost gone for the Chargers and Broncos, even though the Chargers obviously have all those head-to-head wins that they got to start the season. If you tell me that a team just not dying of self-inflicted wounds, which is what the Chiefs did against the Jags, obviously, a team that doesn't have those problems and is able to play some like relatively consistent like high function football that's just not total chaos, that's probably the best team in the league. That's probably a team that should be favored every week. The Chiefs will not end this season with three regular season losses. I'd be stunned. Everybody's going to have another messy game somewhere down the schedule, but I wouldn't be buying anyone's stock more than I'd be buying the Chiefs right now, which feels so crazy considering how the season started, but also so fitting considering who their quarterback is.
Let me ask you this. Are you buying stock in the Chiefs right now because of their offense or because of their defense?
I think I'm buying it because of the offense. I think what we saw from the defense against the Lions, and to a pretty decent extent against the Ravens as well, is I think you see with the defense that there are two ways they can help you win games. You can have some Chris Jones takeover plays, and you can have Spags plays, or even Spags days, where he's able to make more than the sum of their parts. I think that's good enough if the offense is great. And I think we are on the verge of seeing a recreation of a truly great Chiefs offense.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe, who is the pre- and post-game host for the Chiefs Radio Network, getting his thoughts right now on the Chiefs as they sit at 3-3. Let's talk about the offensive line. I guess a two-part question here. I guess let's start with Joshua Simmons. I think you always have to give it a large measure of respect because it is a personal issue. I don't know what it is. It could be health-related. It could be family-related. I don't know. When you say personal issue, I think everybody has to bounce back. But can we at least acknowledge that this feels a little bit different than like a normal family situation? At least how they're talking about it and how the conversation around it is. Like, why was Andy so short about it? Nate Taylor is using words like mysterious. That's not usually how we describe a personal matter.
No, you're right. And just for like absolute clarity, I don't know a lick more than, as far as I can tell, anybody else does. So I'm in a similar spot here. But I do think you can look at how they've responded so far and go like, well, this is a little strange. Like, there is an air around this, again, like Nate talking about like it being mysterious or whatever. On the other hand, we just saw an example with Chris Jones coming back from his aunt's funeral. We just saw an example of, it seemed like he and the team were communicating. They figured it out. He got back just in time for the game. It was a very weird and kind of like chaotic situation, and obviously an incredibly tough day for him. But like, it seemed like they were all kind of on the same page. You have that James Palmer tweet from Sunday that made it sound like some people in the Chiefs organization didn't know what was going on there. So that is strange to me. You haven't asked me about Jalen Moore yet, so I'm not going to go into that total tangent, but I want to put a spotlight on what he did for a number of reasons. But yeah, no, it is a little bit strange, especially when we just saw everybody seemed to handle the Chris Jones thing pretty well. Again, not knowing what's going on, frankly, I don't know. I'm not even in a place where I necessarily want to say that what the personal matter is even matters to me. What I do think, though, matters is you want to make sure that the player and the team are in communication about all this, where nobody's being left in the dark. I think pretty much everybody can respect, like, hey, sometimes there's stuff you've got to handle, whatever the family business may be. Again, not a clue from my side, but the idea of like having to go handle some family business, that's not inherently weird. The air of mystery, or sort of the idea that the Chiefs are handling it a little bit differently, I do think is noteworthy.
Yeah, and to me, I think that's the only reason why it's a story, and I use that very loosely. It is how it was reported. You and I both know that when a report comes from a Rappaport or a Mike Garofolo or Tom Pelissero, like, that is coming from an agent or that is coming from the team. And then when you see that report that says that everybody on the front office wasn't aware on the same page, it lets you just know that this is a deeper story than just, hey, you had a family emergency, you notify the team and you're off going to handle that until you come back. That's the interesting part about this, because that's not what happened with Chris Jones. Chris Jones was put on the list. We then found out pretty quickly why he was on the list, and we kind of had all the information up front. We have none of the information right now with Joshua Simmons.
Right, and again, the question just is, what do the Chiefs know? Because Josh Simmons doesn't owe that to everybody else. The Chiefs don't even necessarily owe that to everybody, but they need to be unified there. Again, obviously, they were with Chris Jones, and that's been a very different vibe on the Simmons case.
Right now, we're going through some of the top storylines when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think that people are really giving enough credit and respect to what Jalen Moore just did. He had a kid in the morning. He then leaves his family. We talk about personal issues. I think it would have been very easy. You haven't been playing. You haven't been getting reps with the one for you just to be inactive because you're spending time with your family. No one would have faulted you for that decision for the birth of your child. You then left there, went to go play again. You haven't been practicing, haven't been getting those reps. I imagine you're frustrated. You signed with the team in free agency thinking that you were going to start. You haven't gotten an opportunity to start at either left or right tackle. And for you to perform and play at that level the way that he did on Sunday Night Football, Jalen Moore deserves a lot of credit for just quite simply being a pro.
I 100% agree, and I'm going to say some of the same stuff here, but I'm just going to restate it because I think it's worth doing. He signs with the Chiefs as like their big initial splash free agent, and the idea, no, you can't promise this, you can't put this in Sharpie, but the idea has to be, hey, Jalen, you've been behind Trent Williams, you've played in a pinch, and you've played very well, now we're going to sign you here, and Jalen Moore has to believe at that point, at bare minimum, he's going to have a chance to win the job to protect Patrick Mahomes' blind side this year and next year on this two-year deal that he's on. That how that goes is also going to impact his next contract because it is a short-term deal. Now, look, I think we all expect him to start at right tackle next year because the Juwan Taylor deal becomes something the Chiefs can move out of, even though Taylor's had a couple nice games in a row now. If you're Jalen Moore, you're coming and thinking, okay, this is going to be a showcase for me. I'm the most high-profile offense in football, the most high-profile team in football, and I'm going to get this done. I'm going to look really good protecting Patrick Mahomes. He's going to make me look good, and we're going to just gel for a year, and then maybe the Chiefs extend me, and I'm just this guy for the next 10 years. Maybe somebody else pays me in a couple of years, but I'm finally getting my chance to be the guy. Well, Jalen Moore signs, and then Josh Simmons is there at the end of the first round, and they take Josh Simmons. And I have to imagine, I don't know, he hasn't said any of this, but I have to imagine Jalen Moore was probably pretty bummed to see that note card get turned in there at the end of the first. So he goes, well, okay, Josh Simmons is coming off of a serious knee injury. He's probably not going to be ready, so at least I'm going to have a chance to take the job early in camp. I'm going to have a chance to be the guy, the incumbent, for a little while. Well, Josh Simmons is ready to go pretty much immediately. Okay, well, at least it's a rookie coming off an injury. We're going to compete. Unfortunately, Jalen Moore, it's never a competition. The rookie who looks good, who's healthy, he's going to get every rep at left tackle with the ones that he can possibly get in training camp. You're going to do some backup stuff with the left and right side. You'll get a couple reps with the starting ones on that right tackle when Juwan Taylor's out, but it's not going to be a whole lot. You might be the guy that steps in if Kingsley Suamataia can't hold on at left guard. You're just our expensive and well-paid, right? He's making good money for this, but you are our do-it-all backup guy for the foreseeable future. That is a far, far cry from what he had to be imagining when he signed with this team in March. And to his unending credit, I didn't hear a peep about it. I haven't had an inkling that he's been pouting or anything, which would be so easy to do, man. I know that backup players talk all the time about how you have to prepare as if you're the starter. And I think that's true. I believe that. But you also can't tell me that Patrick Mahomes and Gardner Minshew are in the same headspace an hour before kickoff every week. It's just not possible. You prepare that way, but it's still different knowing you're the guy. Like you just said, Jalen Moore wasn't running with the ones all week in practice. He wasn't thinking, okay, well, I've got a few days here to really get ready for a full day across from Aiden Hutchinson in an overall pretty good Lions pass rush. It was short notice, it was a quick elevation, and then he played really, really well at left tackle in a tough spot to make his first start with this team. I think you said it already, but the professionalism of what Jalen Moore has done so far this year, I don't think should be overlooked, and it wasn't overlooked by Andy Reid. They put out the clip out of the locker room post-game, or I guess it was yesterday morning I think they posted it, and it's Andy talking to the locker room, and then he calls out Jalen Moore, who comes in and he leads the breakdown in the huddle in the locker room after the game. I think that is a really cool encapsulation of how Jalen Moore's year has gone so far. I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he's navigated these last 6 months.
What was your favorite part of the fight?
Oh man, I mean, I knew that. I think it was okay. No, I know for sure. It was Patrick Mahomes before the fight began. He puts his hand out to Brian Branch, and when Branch walks by, Mahomes kind of smirks and like smacks him on the back of the shoulder pad a little bit, like, "Okay, bud, all right." Not knowing that that would potentially, I guess, light the fuse for the next 2 minutes of chaos. I was nervous when Juju was on the ground. The pictures out of that have been pretty good, but no, I think the thing that really got my got me to smirk a little bit at the moment was the Mahomes like, "Okay, pal." Tap, tap, we'll see you later then. And then all hell broke loose shortly thereafter.
I have never, ever heard a defensive player say that he was tired of being bullied. You're supposed to be the bully. You're the one that tackles people. The fact that as a defensive player, you feel like all the other players have been ganging up on you, I'm sorry, that's funny to me.
I understand he got popped by Kingsley. Kingsley punished the jumper in Brian Branch. That's what linemen are supposed to do there. The idea that he's just been getting blocked so hard by Juju Smith-Schuster, who's played such a physical brand of football, that the vaunted physical Detroit Lions and their like incredible playmaking leader over there just got burnt out is truly hilarious. Yeah, I did think it was nice that they were able to draw blood as a defense eventually. I just would have suggested doing it before the game ended.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe. He is the pre- and post-game host for the Chiefs Radio Network, joining us for a couple more minutes. Are you surprised that Matt Nagy's name is already starting to pop up for some of these jobs? I imagine that's going to continue if Miami becomes available. I think they're going to want to hire an offensive-minded head coach. If the Giants become available, especially with Jackson Dart, I think that Nagy's going to be a candidate for most of these jobs that could potentially come open.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see if it's Tennessee with Mike Borgonzi calling the shots there, or if it's gonna be everybody. I was a little surprised, and look, like, it's kind of funny, like, Arthur Smith and Matt Nagy being the first two names to get floated out for the Titans job is pretty funny, just kind of considering, like, how their previous tenures have gone and what they've done since then. I do think that it makes sense outside of Kansas City for Matt Nagy to be in these conversations. I think Chiefs fans, by and large, have gotten pretty comfortable over the years just blaming the offensive coordinator, whoever it is, for whatever is going wrong, even though it is Andy Reid's offense. Meanwhile, Andy Reid is always very effusive in his praise, not just of Nagy, but of all of the guys on that coaching staff helping to build the game plan and everything. And he always, Andy Reid takes credit for, takes blame for the bad plays and gives credit for the good plays to those guys. It's one of the things that I think must make him a pretty good coach to work for. But I think it makes sense that just whoever is closest to the hem of Patrick Mahomes' garment is always deserving of being in some of those head coaching interview discussions. And I think it makes sense if you want to have a guy that definitely did learn some things from his first head coaching stint, and he went to the playoffs with Mitch Trubisky, right? Like, I mean, it wasn't all bad there, but I think Nagy has unfairly been villainized by some Chiefs fans when the offense has sputtered. I also don't know that I would have him extremely high on a head coaching ranking right now, but if you're a team that maybe you felt like you've gotten burnt by the first time head coach things, and you're not going to be in a potential, perhaps a potential John Harbaugh sweepstakes that I guess could pop up if Baltimore makes a change. I understand how you at least do bring a Matt Nagy type in for the interview. I think Tennessee makes the most sense as a serious destination, though. And then obviously that's a huge prize for Matt Nagy if he does have a chance to be a head coach again and he gets to coach Cam Ward doing it.
If you had to do a power ranking of Chiefs rivals, where would the Raiders rank?
Man, I mean, they've just been dropping for a long time now, right? Pre-Mahomes era, like in my childhood, of course, they're one or two with the Broncos, and then you know mix like the Colts in for some of the high-profile games they had, I think. But now, the Bills are certainly above them. The Broncos, I think, have to be above them. The Chargers don't feel quite as much of a rival, even though they've been a better team for most of these few years. You might have an argument for an Eagles in there, even at this point. I think I'd probably put the Raiders at maybe four or five still, purely because both of these organizations do have so much shared history and so much, I think, like, mutual respect for where all of that hatred and history comes from. And both of these, well, I don't know if I can say both of these teams. The Chiefs, at least, are very, very tied to their own history. The Raiders moving to Vegas takes another lick out of that for them. So I still think they're in, like, the top five of Chiefs rivals because I do think the history is that important. But the games haven't felt that way in quite a long time, even with that Christmas meltdown in recent history.
I can't remember if I've asked you this, so if I have, I apologize. What is the word that you can't spell without spell check? My word is convenience. What's your word?
Oh, man. I've definitely, unfortunately, receiver took me a long time in this line of work. I did eventually figure that out. I feel like I've got one really obvious one that I can't think of right now because I just like the battle that not only do you need spell check for, but sometimes you need to take a couple of passes at it. You get too many vowels in there and I might struggle. I'm thinking, I've figured out refrigerator. I've figured out receiver. I figured out February. I've gotten most of those problematic losses from my childhood, repping plenty of spelling bee type reps, but I don't know. I feel like I should have a better answer. You can ask me again next week, and I'll keep an eye on it this week and figure out when I have one of those moments when I not only, again, can I not spell the word, I can't get close enough to the word for my phone to fix it for me. But some of those are out there for sure.
Who is your favorite fictional football player?
Okay. So I'm thinking of lots of them. I'm not thinking of any that I have an immediate, extremely strong feeling towards. Have you had other answers on this that are like,
no, dominating? It popped in my head to ask you because I mean, the obvious answer is Tim Riggins, but I didn't know if you were a Friday Night Lights guy. I wasn't sure.
No, I never was a Friday Night Lights guy, and I've only ever heard good things, and I respect it entirely. I can think of lots of bad football being played in movies. But I would really hate to leave you on like two non-answers. I feel bad about how this is going from a radio perspective. I don't know that I've got, I'm sure I do. I'm sure there's a fictional football player that I think of often. How about Chargin' Chuck from the Mario games?
No,
not a movie.
Okay. All right. Bye. Bye, Joshua Briscoe. That's Joshua Briscoe on the show. Just what's happening here?
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you
what
know why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.